today on Building on the Solid Rock with Pastor Troy Neely.
The world breeds disorder, selfishness, independence. I mean, think about this. This is what the world trains us to embrace. Selfishness, you got to love you. You need you time. Our magazines, from us and world to self. Me. But the Bible teaches us something totally different. He said, deny yourself.
Deeper and deeper, deeper and deeper, I want to know you more.
Pastor Troy will be teaching on the most descriptive account of a demon-possessed man. Christ brought healing and transformation to the demoniac that proved Christ's authority over the demonic realm. When you're attacked and tempted, you can always rely on Jesus. He has the final authority. Now make sure and stay with us after Pastor Troy's message. I want to share our contact information with you, as well as how you can receive a free copy of today's broadcast. Now open your Bibles to the Gospel of Matthew chapter 8, verse 26, as we join Pastor Troy for our continuing study entitled Peace in Chaos.
We get rattled when circumstances change in our lives because we like order. I understand this way and this is different. Difficulties arise. Things change and we get tense because we don't know what to expect and I have a desired outcome. Look, things have changed. It's out of control. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to end up. I want this to happen, God, and this doesn't look like it's going to happen. So what's going to happen? Jesus, don't you care? And we're crying out to Him. We're expecting change. We're expecting provision. We're expecting something. And it's like Jesus is asleep. But Jesus isn't asleep. Not in our boat. He's risen. He doesn't need to sleep now. He's always awake. In your time zone, in China's time zone, there is no time zone in which He can sleep now. So He's always alert. The difference is we panic and He doesn't, because He knows the will of God. And for them, death isn't all that bad. For them, it's like, oh, He's about to come and be with us. Come on up. And we're like, oh Lord, don't let Him die. Hold on, keep Him down here. Keep Him down here in this filthy, contaminated world. Even though He's going to have to live on life support, Lord, just keep Him down here. And they're praying against my will. They're praying against my, I want Him up here. See, they see life afterwards. We see death. Finality. They have a different perspective. We think He's going to get on the bullhorn and start talking to us in a panicked state because everything is falling apart and He didn't realize it. But that's not Jesus. Instead, we experience the storm and Jesus is like, hey, chill out. It's fine. You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. There's a road when we're going home that as you go up it, you see the McDonald's sign. And it looks like you're going to run right into the McDonald's. But what you don't realize is as you come up over the horizon, it veers to the left. You're not going to hit the McDonald's. Now, you don't see the rest of the road because of the way the horizon is. But a few times of traveling it, I realized we're not going to hit the McDonald's. The kids have realized we're not going to hit the McDonald's. When you walk by faith and begin to trust the Lord, you begin to realize there are some things God's doing I'm not aware of, and I'm going to trust Him. I don't see it all. I don't understand it all. But I have lived long enough that I know we're going to be okay and that God's got it under control. We need to trust in the Lord because that's where our peace is found. In Luke chapter 8, Jesus had already told them, Luke's account of this story, that the plan was to go to the other side. He said, let's go to the other side. They needed to trust Him that they would get there. Now, we compare Jesus' calm with the disciples' fear. Let's compare the disciples' faith with the centurion's faith. Do you remember the centurion? He showed up, needed healing for his servant. Jesus was, all right, let's go. And he said, no, I don't even need that you come under my roof. I'm a man under authority. I understand authority. All you got to do is say the word and I know he'll be healed. Jesus said to his disciples, I have not seen such great faith even in all Israel. And he sure hadn't in his boat. He says to them, he says to the centurion, look at this. I have not seen such great faith in Israel. This is a centurion, a Gentile, not a Jew, not God's people. And now he's in the boat and the disciples are freaking out and panicking. He says, where is your faith? The difference in the centurion's faith and the disciples' lack of faith was their understanding of who Jesus is and the authority he has over the circumstances. Jesus had already taught with authority as he came down, or as he finished his teachings on the mount. The people said, man, he teaches with authority. Not like the scribes and the Pharisees. I mean, there's authority in his teaching. Jesus had shown his authority over sickness. He came down right away, heals a leper. Then there was the centurion's servant, and he says, I have not seen such great faith. And now he shows his authority over nature. Do you see what Jesus is doing? He's revealing who he is and how much authority he has, and he has authority over everything. Now he shows his authority over the spiritual. Sometimes we worry about that, right? But there's Satan. What about Satan? Well, let me tell you. Verse 28. When he had come to the other side, to the country of the Gergesenes, there met him two demon-possessed men coming out of the tombs exceedingly fierce, so that no one could pass that way. And suddenly they cried out, saying, what have we do to you? What have we to do with you, Jesus, the Son of God? Have you come here to torment us before the time? Now, a good way off from them, there was a herd of many swine feeding. So the demons begged him, saying, if you cast us out, permit us to go away into the herd of swine. And he said to them, go. One word. So when they had come out, they went into the herd of swine, and suddenly the whole herd of swine ran violently down the steep place into the sea and perished in the water. Then those who kept them fled, and they went away into the city and told everything, including what had happened to the demon-possessed men. And behold, the whole city came out to meet Jesus. Now that sounds good, period, right? Oh, but look. And when they saw him, they begged him to depart from their region. What are you guys thinking? I'd have been bringing my sick. Notice the demons recognize Jesus, and they recognize the fact that there's something that we skip over. He says, have you come here to torment us before the time? The demons understood that there was a time coming for their ultimate destruction and torment. They understand this. They also understand Jesus has the authority over that. And so they say, have you come here before that time to destroy us? It shows us, if you don't gloss over it, that there is a place of torment. There is a hell. I know the world doesn't want to believe in a hell. Some will believe in heaven. I like that idea. That there's a good, loving God, and why would he send someone like me? I'm actually nice. I just have some hangups. I'm just nice, but I should go to heaven. Without this idea of a hell. There is a hell. Jesus spoke more about hell than heaven. He warned. The idea isn't he spoke of it, but he warned of it. You know about warnings, right? There to help you avoid something. It's a warning. It's given in advance. You don't see the cops going, bam, 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 freeze or I'll shoot. Freeze or I will have to shoot. Put down the weapon or we will have to fire. Right? It's an advance warning. Hell can be avoided. You've been warned in advance. The world has been warned in advance. And the price has been paid. What is the price? What would actually send me to hell? Well, Jesus died for all sin. We're all sinners, so we're all the same. So your being a sinner isn't what's going to send you to hell now, because Jesus paid the price for sin. But there is a difference in a sinner who puts their faith in Jesus Christ for the remission of sins, the coverage of sins, and a sinner who does not do that. Now, in the case of the sinner who believes in Jesus as Lord, follows him, and trusts his life to him, he's still a sinner. He's imperfect. God begins a work in him, but you're still imperfect. But his sin is, it says, covered. They've been paid for. It's not like Jesus says, okay, I'm going to forgive them because they believe in me, and I'm not going to forgive them because they didn't. He paid a price. So the price has been paid for the sin, and they've accepted it. Those who don't, it's not, well, I didn't commit murder. Surely he wouldn't send me to hell for that. That's not the standard for hell or heaven. The standard is, do you believe in Jesus Christ? Will you follow him? Will you get in the boat with him? Will you be all in for Jesus Christ? That's the standard. Morally, you know, there's a lot of work that'll be done in your life. But it's not bad people go to hell, good people go to heaven. According to the scriptures, there are no good people. Jesus said there's not any good but one. God. And so you will go to hell because you're a sinner. But you're a sinner just like those who are saved. The difference is you will not put your faith in Jesus Christ. You have a choice. It's your choice. He extends the choice to you. He's placed Christians in your life. He himself has revealed himself to you on your own when you have no other explanation for this struggle that's going on in your heart. But God knows it's there because he's doing it. He's the one invading your space, your heart. And he enables you to be an overcomer. See, there was a story about a man and his daughter. They went to take a walk away from their village back in the, you know, prairie days, the frontier days. And they were walking in this big prairie, just tall grass. And they ventured out a little far away from the town. Nothing but prairie for acres and acres and acres. And they looked back only to see that there had been a fire that began behind them, between them and the village. Not knowing where they would be able to go, not feeling that they could outrun the fire with a slight breeze coming towards them, he thought real quick, got his implements out, and began a small controlled fire himself around his area and burned a large patch as the fire worked its way towards them. And he and his daughter stood in the middle of that patch. And the fire came and it came, it approached and it consumed. But when it burned all around them, but it did not burn that spot. The reason it did not burn that spot was there was nothing to burn. It had been burned. In Jesus Christ, everyone will be judged, but if you're found in Christ, you're standing in a spot that's already been burned. The judgment has been poured out. It was poured out on the cross. That is the difference in someone who's unsaved and someone who is saved. It has nothing to do with better and worse. I was a better person, had a better upbringing. It has to do with being a believer, a follower of Jesus Christ. So, hell is real, but hell can be avoided. And hell was not intended for man. In Matthew 25, verse 41, Jesus will say to those who rejected him, "Depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels." God never thought of heaven or hell, I'm sorry, hell for you and I. It was because of the fall, the angelic fall. But that angelic fall, sin has consequences and affects other lives, and Satan obviously influenced the two in the garden, which affects all of our lives. Something I want to make clear, because when I was a kid growing up, I didn't realize this, and maybe some adults don't even realize this, but Satan, though he is the adversary, and though Satan is the enemy of God, he's not the equal with God. He's not the opposite of God. It's not like in the end, hopefully God wins. I used to look up and see thunderstorms, and you see blue skies and gray skies, and I used to think, That's God and Satan. They're fighting each other right now. And if the sun came out, then, oh, God was winning, and, oh, man, Satan's kind of getting the upper hand. That's my little, that's all I understood at the time. But Satan is going to be destroyed. God is letting, for some reason, all of this unravel to a certain end. And then he's going to destroy everything, burning with fire, everything that has been corrupted by sin, including us who have not repented and given our lives to him to be redeemed. And it will be gone and done away with. There will be a new heaven and a new earth. There will be access to the throne of God again for people, for us. But it all depends upon whose side you're on as to what happens to you in the end. Now, this scene gives us a few insights. One, it shows that Satan, or what Satan came to do. He robs us of our sanity and our self-control. He fills us with fears and turmoil. He robs us of quality relationship. He destroys lives. He influences so that we make decisions that corrupt and destroy everything around us. It's not good. Ultimately, he's come to be the destroyer. We see it in the swine who, because they can't reason, they simply go mad and dive off the cliff. They just went crazy right away. That's what he intends to do. John 10:10 says, "The thief does not come except to steal, kill, and to destroy. I, Jesus, have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly." So it shows what the thief or Satan came to do. It also shows man's solutions for spiritual problems. Men try to put physical restraints on. We could say we come up with systems of correction. We want to correct them with a system, a 12-step program, something that will, if you follow these, you'll be okay. No, if you follow those, it means you can follow rules and come out the other end. Now, it can transform you as you're exposed to the good things, but it can correct you, but it won't necessarily transform you. We find this out because in many, many, I won't use names of ministries, but in many ministries where they go through drug rehabilitation and those, what they do is, here's the process. They have steps. They take them through the steps. They keep them so busy, they don't have time to think about anything else. So they're very, 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 very busy. And when they're not busy, they're either reading their Bible, they're doing this, they're doing that, but they're always kept busy because they got to break those habits and those chains. And that's a good thing. But what happens is, over time, once they start getting freedom and they graduate, they either never graduate, or if they do graduate, very often because there hasn't really been a transformation, they've just followed this pattern of correction, they go back into the same things because there's not a transformation. That's the world's system. The world also tries to isolate and avoid. They had put this guy out, had nothing to do with him. Out of sight, out of mind. All these were unable to change him. But Jesus, this shows what Jesus does. He transforms. He delivers and restores. And how did he do it? By his word. He didn't need a bunch of steps. He just needed access to this man. And he transformed. Jesus wants to deliver and restore your life. And some of us actually think we're more okay than we actually are. Now, I was a good kid. I was a very good kid. Compared to the other kids I hung around, I was one of the better kids, maybe the best kid. I mean, more parents would have wanted a kid like me than some of my friends. And yet, though I was a good kid, I still had some things that I was involved in. I was still making some bad decisions. I mean, I would go out on the weekends and party on the weekends with the friends. I'm a good kid, and I know how to handle myself. Yet there were times where I thank God I got home because I was driving. And I should not have been. I remember having to look at the road so close, feeling like I'm doing 100 miles an hour, probably doing 20. And it was not good. I'm very thankful that I survived those times of being a good kid. on a bad course. I also grew up and I did things I had to lie to my parents about. Now, I'm a good kid. I was a good kid. But I had some things in my life that I did that I had to lie to my parents about. And let me tell you, lying is a bad habit to get into because we become callous to the fact that we're doing things that we need to hide. So rather than changing the things that we need to hide, we continue doing the things we need to hide. We just try to get good at lying. And that does no one any good. But Jesus wants to set you on a good course, walking in truth, destined for heaven, not being a good person getting by, being a transformed, saved person, ensured that you're going to heaven. Sadly, the people in this town were more concerned about their swine or their business, their money making, than they were about their souls. So Satan wants to destroy life. Jesus wants to give it. The world breeds disorder, selfishness, independence. I mean, think about this. This is what the world trains us to embrace. Selfishness, you got to love you. You need you time. Our magazines, from us and world to self. Me. But the Bible teaches us something totally different. He said, deny yourself. Lay down your life. Stop thinking so much about you. That would be depressing. But the world teaches us disorder. God teaches order. The world teaches selfishness. God teaches selflessness. The world teaches independence. God says you're a servant. Not independent. Not independent of me. But dependent upon me. The world gives a false sense of security as they teach you about your IRAs and your Roths and your retirement plans and how you got to do that and take care of your future. And yeah, some are set, some are others, others are not, others are trying to get set. But to have trust in those things is a false sense of security. They can be taken away just like that. God says, trust in me daily for your bread. Jesus gives us something eternal, something true to look forward to. It's in living with that perspective that we enjoy the peace of Christ. You can have peace in the storms. It comes from realizing that Christ is the authority. It comes from being okay with God's will. And you can have peace in your soul, a peace that impacts others around you. First, you got to let Him clean the inside. Let Him have you. Then you need to get an understanding of His priorities, get in His Word and understand how we're supposed to live. Get your home in order. There was this possessed man who asked Jesus, "Can I go with you?" And Jesus says, "No, go back to your own town." Not that Jesus was dissing him, but Jesus' idea was to go and show them the great things God has done. God's priority is that we take care of our home and get it in order first. Christian service begins at home because faith must be genuine. It can't be fake. It can't be manufactured because I'm here at church hanging out, looking good. It must start in the home and be genuine. If a man can't manage his home, he cannot take care of the things of God. It doesn't mean you have to be perfect. But you need to have things in a genuine control under the lordship of Jesus Christ. Not perfectly, but in submission. Then, beyond your home, because we're not to be selfish, witness in the sphere of influence that God has given you, the place of work, the grocery store, your social circle, your extended family. Be a witness in those environments. And then, as you grow, use your gifts to build up the body of Christ. We are called to more than just thinking about ourselves. If you do these things, it'll bring you peace.
Deeper and deeper, deeper and deeper, deeper and deeper. I want to know you more.
Pastor Troy will pick up where he left off the next time you join us for another study through the Gospel of Matthew here on Building on the Solid Rock. If you live in the San Antonio, Texas area, we want to invite you to join us for worship. The messages that you hear on Building on the Solid Rock are produced from worship services at Calvary Chapel, Solid Rock. maybe the teaching you heard today is exactly what you're looking for in a church, then please join us. We meet Sundays at 9:30 a.m. and Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. For more information about our ministry, including service times and driving directions, log on to our website, buildingonthesolidrock.com. That's buildingonthesolidrock.com. There you will be able to listen to or download any of our messages in their entirety, as well as get to know us better. Well, that's all the time we have for today. We want to thank you for tuning in, and may God richly bless you.
But somehow I survive, and I wonder why. I wonder why. And I look up and see the hand that I turned from when the storm began, and it covers me.